Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, the California Endowment. Health happens when California values schools more than prisons. Learn more at calendow.org. And by the California Healthcare Foundation, dedicated to a healthcare system that works for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org.
From Valley Public Radio, serving Central California from Bakersfield to Merced, this is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly news magazine program. I'm Joe Moore. On today's show, we continue our coverage of the 2016 election and local issues that matter to you. We'll talk to candidates for office in Bakersfield and Fresno, and also learn about a special election taking place today in Visalia, about a bond measure for Cahuilla Delta Hospital, and we'll find out about Grizzly Fest that's coming to Chuck Chancey Park this weekend. Right now, though, we turn our attention to the issue of getting clean drinking water. A few weeks ago, we heard about Matheny Tract, a Tulare County community with arsenic in the water supply. They're now getting clean drinking water thanks to a new state law. That's progress, but the state estimates around a million Californians lack access to safe drinking water. Now, Carrie Klein takes us to another community struggling to get rid of arsenic, this one in Kern County, where a community took the fight for clean water into its own hands.
It's recess at El Camino Real Elementary School in Arvin. Tetherball courts are packed. Kids here tell me how much they like to play outside.
I play tag.
I play soccer.
We do jumping jacks and push-ups.
I just go out and play with my friends.
The sun is bright here and hot. So when 8-year-old Joanna Mendoza and her friends need a break, they know what to do.
We walk to the water station and we drink some water.
That may sound totally mundane, but a year ago, Mendoza wouldn't touch the school water.
It was really dirty. I never drank it because my mom told me not to. And I also didn't really like the taste of it. It didn't taste clean and it looked really dirty.
More precisely, it was contaminated with arsenic. It's in the drinking water in this rural agricultural town of 20,000 people. Arsenic has been a problem here since 2001, before these kids were born. But now, 15 years later, a new advocacy campaign has temporarily solved the problem, at least in schools. They've installed state-of-the-art water filters, given kids durable water bottles, and installed stations where students can refill those bottles. And overlooking every one of those stations is Wally the Water Droplet, a smiley little cartoon. The students are taught only drink the water if Wally's there.
He looks like a dewdrop, and he's blue. And he has a smile on his face, and he has his hands up in emotion. He looks friendly.
This is all a result of Agua for All, a collaboration between nonprofit advocacy groups and concerned residents. Sarah Buck is with the Rural Community Assistance Corporation.
Agua for All is basically a project to increase access to and consumption of safe drinking water throughout California. For the past 2 years, we've been doing a pilot project to, you know, get to that end through the installation of water bottle filling stations and treatment where necessary in South Kern and the eastern Coachella Valley.
So far, they've installed over 140 filling stations and 80 filters in schools and public spaces like parks. And Wally the Water Droplet, he plays a very important role.
Once you know your water's safe, then we really want you to drink a lot of it, because a lot of these kids and families really just are drinking way too many sugar-sweetened beverages and aren't drinking enough water. So we really want to, you know, make water cool and make it desirable.
Agua for All is the product of over 2 years of planning and more than $2 million in grants and donations like water bottles. You might be wondering, why did it come to this? Lawmakers passed laws like the Safe Drinking Water Act and the Human Right to Water Bill to protect communities like Arvin. And yet, it was still up to a group of advocates to raise their own money and install their own filters. Buck says even though these laws are huge steps forward, they're still vastly underfunded. And community efforts like Agua for All may bring change faster than government agencies can.
They say your water has to be, you know, under this amount to be safe. And we're going to fine you if you don't, but there's not necessarily a mechanism for us to, you know, give you the money to do it.
The EPA recognizes the problems here in California. Jared Blumenfeld is an EPA administrator in charge of a number of Western states. He says the agency is putting pressure on California to prioritize smaller communities like Arvin.
Any of the medium-sized
and large cities, this isn't an issue because you can pay for the infrastructure to take the arsenic out of the water. But if you're in a small community, drilling new wells is hard, and many communities have drilled well upon well, and the source water still contains arsenic.
He says Agua for All has been a huge success, and it could be a model for other communities lacking money for big infrastructure upgrades. But even this shouldn't have been so hard. Here he is, speaking at an Agua for All event in April.
And we're here in 2016 celebrating a water fountain. Like, you'd think we were going to the moon, because this has taken that kind of effort.
Agua for All has made many schools and public spaces safer. And residents just need to wait a little longer for arsenic-free water in their homes. The city is drilling new wells, and so far, arsenic levels are well within the safe zone. If all 5 wells come up clean and clear, the rest of Arvin could get new drinking water as early as 2018. For Valley Public Radio, I'm Carrie Klein.
This is Valley Edition. Today is the deadline for residents in Visalia to have their ballots postmarked in a big vote that could determine the future of the Kauai Delta Hospital District. The hospital is asking the community to tax itself to support a new acute care hospital. As Valley Public Radio's Jeffrey Hess reports, Kauai says it has no choice, but opponents disagree.
First, a bit of background. State law requires that every hospital be hardened against earthquakes by 2030. Kauai Delta Hospital says that means they need to fully replace their existing 5-decade-old main building with a modern, earthquake-resistant one. Hospital CEO Lindsay Mann says they're asking voters to approve a bond for more than $300 million, called Measure H. He says it's the smartest way to raise the money needed to construct a comprehensive replacement hospital before their existing building is no longer compliant.
It would allow the community to ask itself one question. How important is health care in Visalia and Tulare County, and how important do we feel it is to participate in funding the creation of a new acute care hospital to replace the 273 beds that will be lost?
Kauai Delta is putting up around $200 million of its own money. That's the most it statutorily can. That brings the total cost of the project to around $500 million. The Measure H property tax would amount to just over $48 per $100,000 of property value over the life of the bond. Still, Mann says that without the money, the community stands to lose significant hospital bed capacity and medical services.
In fact, Kauai Delta is the only hospital in Tulare and Kings County that has cardiac surgery, neurosurgery, mental health and rehabilitation services. We have very high caliber cancer services, NICU services.
Mann has a tough row to hoe. The bond measure must pass with a 2/3 majority. Tough under any circumstances, let alone one where the hospital's been accused of trying to slip the measure through on a mail-only standalone ballot. 57,000 ballots have been mailed out and must be postmarked for return by today. But the size and scope of the plans have drawn pushback from the community and from the head of a nearby hospital.
You could build the best stagecoach factory in the world, but it won't do you much good if everybody's going to cars.
Dr. Benny Benzivi is the chairman of the Healthcare Conglomerate Associates, which manages the neighboring Tulare Regional Medical Center in the city of Tulare. Benzivi contends building a flashy new hospital with all the bells and whistles is looking backwards rather than looking toward a new healthcare environment.
The model of the future looks to building healthier populations with the weight of the emphasis on prevention rather than intervention.
Benzivi himself even contributed $38,000 to lobby against Measure H. But he says his opposition is because he doubts Kauai's plans, not because of competition between the facilities. It should be noted that later this year, Tulare Regional will also seek a community bond, albeit for a lower amount of about $55 million. A community is also formed on Facebook to oppose the bond measure called Visalia No on Measure H. One of the group's leaders, Nevin House, acknowledges that Kauai needs a new building, but dislikes how they're seeking the funding.
We have a problem with the way that Kauai Delta is wanting to finance it on the backs of the taxpayers. There are multiple other options, many of which are being used by other hospitals in the state of California to meet the legal requirements for earthquake safety.
For example, the hospital could find a partner, restructure itself to borrow more money, or sell off non-essential assets like a retirement home or dialysis centers. It's not clear what Kauia will do next should the bond fail. Its CEO remains optimistic that voters in the area will support them. If a voter's lost their ballot or wants to vote in person, they can do so at the Tulare County Register of Voters in Visalia today. For Valley Public Radio News, I'm Jeffrey Hess.
This is Valley Edition. In Bakersfield right now, the local politics scene has been turned on its head. There's 25 candidates running to be the next mayor of Bakersfield to replace Harvey Hall, who is completing his third term in office at City Hall in Bakersfield. Last week, we talked to former Kern County Supervisor Karen Goh, who's running for the seat. Today, we continue our conversation with candidates and turn to another who has thrown his hat into the ring, and that's TJ Esposito. He's the owner of a local marketing firm and works on marketing jobs with a local bail bonds company and other things as well. He joins us now on Valley Edition. TJ, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
TJ, you've been in the marketing business for a while now. Why get into the politics business, throwing your hat into the race for mayor?
You know, Joe, there's been a trend in government, even on a local level, where, you know, we have so many career politicians pushing an agenda. You know, it's tough for citizens to have a voice in government. And, you know, I think it's time that that people can hear the actual citizen in government.
TJ, you talk about that if you win this race, you will be the people's mayor. What does that mean? What would that be different than, say, Harvey Hall? I mean, he's been in office for, well, since the early 2000s now. Was he not the people's mayor? What does the people's mayor mean to you?
Well, you know, let me clarify that. The people's mayor means I'm going to represent every single person as mayor. You know, what happens is in this position specifically, it's actually a nonpartisan position. So, you know, everybody as a citizen needs to have representation in government. And if you have, say, for instance, a Republican candidate going for this, you know, maybe some people will be left out, for instance, the Dreamers or the homosexual, lesbian, gay community. They may be left out. The mayor needs to show up to those parades, and the mayor needs to stand behind every legal citizen, that's in the city, whether they agree with them or not, you know. And I think that that's what kind of separates me from some of the other front runners, is that I will represent every single citizen as mayor.
Now, the Bakersfield mayor's office is a little unique in that it has limited responsibilities, but there are some key jobs. You would run city council meetings if you were elected. You also could potentially cast a vote if the city council is tied in its vote on a particular issue. What are you seeing as the biggest actual real issues, aside from making sure that everyone has a voice and feels like they're being heard by government, when it comes to the future of the city? What do you see as the biggest challenges the city of Bakersfield faces right now?
You know, we have lots of challenges. I mean, we've come in on the top 10 worst city list time and time again. We get so much bad press as the most illiterate city. We get press as the drunkest city, the most violent police. You've seen the national news stories. It's terrible. And so what we need is somebody to actually lead and stick up for our city. And, you know, the one thing about the mayor's office, he doesn't have much power when it comes to actually voting, but you know, he's the one guy that can say that Bakersfield is behind something. So for instance, you know, if you know, we go for some type of grant to the government, you know, and the mayor gets behind it, that speaks volumes to the committee or the folks responsible for you know, granting those things. And you know, the city manager can't say Bakersfield is behind something, neither can the supervisors. The mayor is the one person that can say Bakersfield is behind this. And that's what I intend to do, is I intend to get behind things that are going to make Bakersfield great and clean up our act, so to speak. You know, we've got to get off of these top 10 worst city lists. I think that, you know, if we look at 2021, we're going to be moving ahead in technology and, you know, green energy, things like that. That's that's going to make us less dependent on things like oil and ag, which are, definitely vulnerable.
If you just joined us on Valley Public Radio today, our guest is T.J. Esposito. He is running for mayor of Bakersfield, one of 25 candidates seeking that office on the June ballot that's coming up. T.J., you've been pretty open in talking about your past, which includes several criminal convictions, burglary, assault, fleeing police, and a high-speed chase. Tell us briefly about your situation in your past and why you feel you've turned a corner.
You know, my life was devastated by a terrible drug addiction at an early age. And, you know, I ended up, I was a very, very smart kid. I was president of my high school 2 out of 4 years. And, you know, I was on the golf team, lots of very, very good things, bright future. But I fell into a cocaine addiction, which turned into a meth addiction at a very early age. I ended up in jail at around 19 and, you know, was able to come out of it, but landed back in around 2007, had a bad divorce and really relapsed. But, you know, being somebody who was homeless, you know, I lived at the rescue mission for the better part of a year. I defeated or actually overcame my terrible drug addiction and was able to bounce back from the homeless shelter and become a homeowner and a good dad and a good husband. You know, I think those things are an advantage that I can help battle those things head on. You know, I know exactly how to overcome those things, and I know what we need to do as a community to fight them, toe to toe.
You mentioned your experience living on the streets, being homeless. Maybe what, how does that, do you think, inform your views on that issue? What do you think the city is doing well or maybe needs to do a better job at when it comes to dealing with those who are living on the streets?
You know, here's the thing, Joe, is we have a lot of barriers, lots of walls. You hear a lot of politicians talking about building walls. Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to tear them down. See, there's a lot of walls in between addicts and treatment, addiction and treatment. There's walls in between the homeless and homeless services, and I intend on tearing those down. For instance, you know, a homeless person to check into the homeless shelter needs to have a valid ID, okay? There's a lot of people I knew with jobs that don't have a valid ID. I mean, you know, the other thing is they have to pass a drug test. You know, there's lots of vets out there that that smoke marijuana for PTSD, and they get turned away at the gate. So, you know, I've been in contact with some of the folks at the rescue mission, the director over there, and he's wide open to suggestions on battling these things and partnering and trying to overcome some of these barriers. I mean, you know, if we're going to require them to meet guidelines and expect them to do things, we've got to set up avenues to help them get there. You know, for instance, I have a plan called Operation Welcome Home. And it's going to be a 4-point plan that's going to cut homeless down on the street 70-75% in 10 months. And I mean, they're just basic little simple things that won't cost much and will be so easy to do. They're just little common sense solutions, things that I face personally challenges getting into the homeless shelter. You have to be there at a certain time. I mean, you know, these folks are walking all day. The legs hurt. They're clogging up the emergency rooms because they want a bottle of orange juice. Little simple things that we can do to fix those major problems that cost us millions and flood our streets with homeless folks sleeping on the sidewalks.
Mayoral candidate T.J. Esposito is with us today on Valley Public Radio. T.J., you mentioned your past. You also mentioned earlier in this interview talking about how Bakersfield sometimes gets a bit of a bad reputation nationally for a variety of reasons. Last year, the Guardian newspaper out of the U.K. did a big series on law enforcement abuses or alleged law enforcement abuses and singled out the Bakersfield Police Department as well as the Kern County Sheriff's Office as being what they termed in their analysis as the nation's deadliest police force in terms of per capita deaths due to use of force by law enforcement in 2015. The department disputes that. What do you think about the approach that local law enforcement has taken? You would be mayor if you won this race, and while Chief Williamson wouldn't report directly to you, you certainly, I'm sure, would have some thoughts on that issue. Do you think that report was justified?
You know, I mean, the reports are the reports and the facts are the facts. They're just numbers. And by the way, I want to start off by answering this question with, you know, I do support our police. And because of the heavy hand of justice that came down on me in my life, I think that that was a huge contributor to my success in life, is the rehabilitation. See, you know, our system is set up to rehabilitate people. And, you know, if we can embrace that and get behind these guys, you know, we can make a big difference in the community. Now, Joe, I think, you know, I've talked to police and I've talked to the folks, the protesters, the Silva guys. You know, they meet every Friday and they protest in front of the BPD. You know, a lot of these guys, all they want on both ends is accountability. You know, our cops and citizens have had a major breakdown in communication. You know, I think the body cameras is the way to go. You know, it's not just the police that want accountability, it's the citizens. And for $250,000, you've got these politicians in town, you know, taking $20,000-$30,000 raises on a $300,000-$400,000 salary. I mean, you know, in Bakersfield, you don't need that much to live. These guys are living, you know, on top of the world. And you know, the basic citizens, for $250,000, we can't get that budget passed to get body cameras to protect our cops and make accountability, make the citizens feel better. You know, and the other thing, Joe, is I remember when I was a kid, kids used to say, I want to be a police officer or I want to be a fireman. These days, it's you better buckle your seatbelt or the cops are going to get you. You know, I mean, we've got to bring that around and back up our law enforcement. And at the same time, we have to bring accountability for the officers and the people on the street. And I think it's the body cameras. We got to have it. It's a win-win. That's what we need, more win-wins, Jeff.
TJ Esposito with us today. He's running for mayor of Bakersfield. The other thing that I hear all the time from our Bakersfield listeners is the issue of transportation. Getting around town is difficult. The city is spending a lot of money right now in projects that are either underway or about to get underway or are in sort of the planning land acquisition phases. You have the Centennial Corridor, the 24th Street Project. These are also expensive projects, though. What do you think? How do you think the city is doing as far as improving transportation and the roadways around the community?
You know, I think they're pretty good, but I'm a little disappointed in a couple of things. You know, these guys are paying attention to the budgets and to the agendas, but we've got to keep our ear to the ground. We've got to pay attention to our citizens, and that's a big deal. We've got to listen to the people. You know, these folks have a lot to say, and they know best. You know, it's not about the agenda or the budget sometimes. And the other thing, Joe, is I think we got to keep in mind that, you know, while we're building these, you know, lanes and expanding, we've got to think about our air. We've got to open up some of those lanes to carpooling. And we've got to think about, you know, making benefits for those driving electric cars. You know, Bakersfield, Kern County, has the worst air quality in the country. I mean, it's terrible. We live in a gas chamber. You know, while these guys are doing it, we've got to be progressive and think outside the box. You know, it's not just about building roads and expanding, because pretty soon we're going to smoke ourselves out of our city. We've got to think about, while we build for more traffic, reducing some of this air pollution. And it's very important, and I think I'm going to be the guy that's going to bring some of those thoughts. I haven't heard about it one time. Nobody's talking about it. So we've got to start talking about those things, kind of like L.A. did. And I'm telling you, it's another win-win. We got to give these guys benefits for driving electric cars and put in some charging stations, things like that, while we're building.
TJ Esposito owns a local marketing firm. He is a candidate for mayor of Bakersfield. There are 24 others who are on the ballot in June. TJ, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you for your time, and I really appreciate your questions.
All right. Thanks a lot, and stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll turn from Bakersfield politics to Fresno politics and talk to former council member Gary Bredefeld. He wants to win back his old seat on District 6 after a absence of over a decade. He'll join us coming up next here on Valley Edition. Listening to Valley Edition, the race for District 6 on the Fresno City Council is one of the most heated local races in Fresno County. Over the last 2 weeks on our program, we talked with two-thirds of the field, including candidates Holly Carter and Jeremy Pierce. This week, it's Gary Bredefeld. He was a city council member in Fresno in this same district from 1997 through 2000. Now he wants to win back his old seat. In his first term, Bredefeld was one of the biggest voices in support of the downtown baseball stadium, now known as Chuck Chancey Park. He was also a critic of leapfrog development. So where does he stand on the issues of today? Gary Bredefeld joins us now on Valley Public Radio. Gary, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Why the decision to get back into politics?
Well, the reality is I love the city. My kids have gone. They're graduating law school actually next month, and I'm not going anywhere. My wife and I are here to stay, and it just presented as an opportunity to get back involved and do good things. And, you know, I think when I served on the city council, we got a lot accomplished, and because I'm a citizen here, I wanted to be involved again.
4 years on the city council. What did you learn during that time?
Well, I learned you can get a lot of things done. I mean, you know, when you serve on a city council, you're making policy for the city, and a lot of good things can happen. If it's good policy, good things will happen. If it's bad policy, bad things will happen. You know, we got a lot of things accomplished. When I came on the council, we were a city infested with crime in the late 1990s. We were number one in auto theft. We were number two in arson. You know, I had small kids at that time, and that's why I got involved. And, you know, we hired, along with my colleagues and the mayor at that time, 170 police officers. We reduced graffiti. We built parks. We enhanced green space. We, you know, got back to essentials, and we turned the city around. And in 2000, became an all-America city from a crime-infested city. So, you know, I saw firsthand how things can get accomplished and good things can happen when people are working together and everybody shares the vision to make the city better. And that's what happened then, and that's what I want to do again.
You didn't leave the city, of course. You've been here all that time, so you've seen what's happened since then. It can be difficult to maintain a lot of the things that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. The city got some federal funding to help hire more officers.
It sure did.
In that case, it was difficult to maintain that. Mm-hmm. Same with building new parks.
Sure.
How do you go about trying to take a long-term approach to these problems when you can throw a lot of money at them at one point, but sustaining it, at least in recent history, has been difficult at City Hall?
Well, we had, unfortunately, the Great Recession in 2009. And thankfully, we had Mayor Swearingen as our mayor, because she stayed focused on what needed to happen, which was making sure that essential services remained. But in spite of that, because of the, you know, the recession, there were cuts. And our police force is not what it was before the recession hit. We need to build them up again. I've talked about innovative ways we can do that by selling unused vacant city land that just sits there. Chestnut and Beheimer, there's about $5 million worth of land that could be sold. It's just unused. Same thing at Herndon and Brawley. That's been sitting there for many, many years. There's about $5 or $6 million that can be sold for that property as well. And that's the city's own estimates. That's not mine.
But that's one-time money. You sell that.
That's one-time money.
How do you maintain that?
Yeah. Let me just add on another thing, because you're right. It is one-time money. There's also the Palm Lakes Golf Course, which can be sold for about $1 million. That's one-time money as well. There's another way that isn't one-time money, and that's convention center naming rights. Big cities have their convention center facilities give naming rights. Fresno can do the same thing. We saw it at Chichancey Park. It worked for $16 million over 15 years with Chichancey. That's an ongoing revenue stream. Same thing with the city of Fresno, can put out offers to see who wants to do the naming rights for the entire convention center facilities. That would be a $10 or $15 million deal. That would be an ongoing operation. In terms of the one-time monies, you don't spend all that one-time money. If you get $11 or $12 or $13 million out of those sales of unused vacant land, you don't spend every dime. You spend a half of it. So you can beef up your police, your firefighters, your code enforcement officers. You have that money. Some of the other folks have talked about putting it into an annuity. Whether or not that would truly generate the kind of money they're proposing it to generate, we'll see. But there's a number of innovative ways we can do it. The other thing is our budget does expand every year. That's how we were able to keep police before. So there's a number of innovative ways we can get money that can build up the police department right away, which is what we need to do because we are at least 100 officers below what it was at our highest point when we were at 850 officers. We've now gotten to about 750, but we still have a ways to go.
Your opponents say that this plan isn't really feasible. Lee Brand, I asked him about your proposal. He said, well, it's great because I first started talking about this, but he said the land at Chestnut and Beheimer there is land that was purchased by the city as part of its water division and that couldn't be used for general fund expenditures like hiring police officers because as an enterprise fund, that would have to go to the water division. Your opponent, Holly Carter, said, well, the city sold the Palm Lakes Golf Course to the redevelopment agency and Governor Brown did away with redevelopment, and now that is being parceled out, but not directly under the control of the city council. How do you respond to those criticisms?
The redevelopment agency was the city council.
It was.
Still city. It's still city money. And in terms of Chestnut and Beheimer, some have talked about some of that land being needed for the continued plant that's over there, water treatment plant that's over there. That may be the case. But it can be sold by the city's own estimates. And Mr. Brand is talking the same thing. I mean, I just watched him last night talk about selling unused vacant land to beef up our police department. So he's talking the same thing that I'm talking about. I don't know if he's talking just Herndon and Broadley or if he's talking Palm Lakes Golf Course. He's not been specific about it. But I know for a fact from the city's own estimates and their own consultants, those lands are available, and that's their estimates in terms of what they could be sold for. So again, we're in a political arena and climate, and so people are going to criticize any idea. I'm hearing Mr. Brand use the same kind of things that I'm talking about. It's that he's talking about putting it into some kind of annuity and estimating it'll generate huge amounts of money. We'll see. Again, I'm not interested in throwing rocks at his plans. If they work, I'm going to support them. The bottom line is we need to beef up our police department, and I'm trying to come up with as many innovative ways as we can to do that.
Gary Bredefeld is with us on Valley Public Radio today. You mentioned Lee Brand. Mm-hmm. You would be succeeding him, and not only succeeding him, but also it's essentially your old seat as well. What sort of job do you think Lee has done over the last 7.5 years?
Well, he's done some fine things. He's worked at trying to ensure that we make good fiscal decisions, and I've always supported that. One of the decisions I completely disagree with is that he bailed out the ownership of the Fresno Grizzlies in 2009 because they came with hat in hand and begged for the city to bail them out and said the rent was too onerous for them to pay. And he bought it hook, line, and sinker and bailed them out to the tune of $750,000 a year for the next 15 years. My opponent, Holly Carter, brags that she was hired by the Grizzlies to get that deal done. I don't believe the city of Fresno should be using taxpayer money to bail out any entity, whether it's the Grizzlies or Club One Casino, which gives the city $1 million in taxes every year. They're fighting bankruptcy and dealing with bankruptcy. Why didn't we bail them out as well? It's just a terrible, terrible way to go. And that was done in 2009. And Lee led the charge on that. I remember him meeting with me. He wanted to meet with me to discuss it. And I said it was the wrong way to go. But he was intent on doing it. It's done. Whatever. So he's done some very fine things. But that was a very bad decision.
You mentioned the Fresno Grizzlies. You were instrumental in leading the effort to build the downtown stadium. Looking back on that process right now, knowing what we know now about downtown revitalization, the successes, the less than successes, knowing what we know now about the changing entertainment landscape, how originally the plan was we were going to have all these concerts at the stadium and that was going to pay for things. Well, the casinos in the area sort of changed the game and concert promotion, Save Mart Center as well. Knowing what we know now, would you have done anything differently in that process?
No, absolutely not. Look, I believe in this city. I believed in it then. I believe in it today. We built a first-class AAA stadium. It's the best stadium in all of AAA baseball. We have the first class, best naming rights in all of AAA baseball. Nobody has Chichansey Park naming rights like we do. $16 million over 15 years. Chichansey Casino believed in downtown. Since that stadium has been built, from the Economic Development Corporation, their own numbers, hundreds of millions of dollars have been invested in there. Buildings that sat vacant and weren't rehabbed are now being rehabbed. There's 500 units, apartments and lofts that have been built. $80 million of private sector investment in terms of the Mural District. If you go down there, you won't believe it. Four or five blocks in a row of houses never existed before the stadium. Now we have Bitwise Industries. Jake Soberall has said, if that stadium hadn't been built, I wouldn't be here. They have all kinds of technology companies as part of Bitwise Industries. I encourage people to go visit there because it's an incredible thing that's going on. Technology, tech has come to Fresno. The stadium has played a major role in all of that. We can't say it's directly responsible, but it was the spark. So we invested $45 million in a stadium, and we've gotten hundreds of millions of dollars in investment. Again, it's not my numbers. It's the Fresno County Economic Development Corporation's numbers. That's a 500% return. I'll take a 500% return. I think most people would take a 100% return on any investment. You know, if I give you a dollar and you get $5 back or $6 back, that's a great return. We spend $45 and we're getting $300 million of investment, all kinds of rehabbing, all kinds of private sector investment, housing investment, new shops, new businesses, technology. All of that happened as a result of the stadium and other things starting 16 or 17 years ago.
Gary Bredefeld is with us today on Valley Public Radio. Gary, one of the other things that I hear residents in District 6 talking about throughout the whole city, really, but including this district, is homelessness, mm-hmm. as this has been a problem that has become more maybe visible in recent years. How do you think the city is doing right now in addressing this problem? What would you do differently if you were on the city council?
Well, I think the city's made a number of strides in trying to deal with the homeless problem. Looking at their stats, there's been some reductions. However, it's not good enough. There's still plenty of homeless. There's still plenty of vagrants. There's still people in the Median Islands asking for money. I think the first thing we need to do is, in terms of the vagrants and the panhandlers, we need to encourage and educate people to stop giving them money. If you stop giving them money, they won't be reinforced for their behavior. If they're not making money, they'll go someplace where they can. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the people truly who are homeless, either because of mental illness or substance abuse, or they've fallen on hard times. We have tremendous resources in Fresno County, and there are people reaching out to them all the time. The city of Fresno has a four-man team that goes and reaches out to these people all the time. There's a thing called MapPoint where people are from different agencies are working together to provide housing and get these people into housing. Because once you get them into housing, typically that's the solution to obviously getting them off the streets. So there's a lot of positive things happening. I want to give Mayor Swearingen credit for some of this. She really has been a staunch advocate in trying to get this accomplished. But we have a long way to go. There's a lot more to be done. And I will be a strong advocate to make sure we deal with our homeless problem. We will solve it. And we will solve it just as when I was on the council before, it felt like we were a city that couldn't deal with the crime problem. We dealt with the crime problem when we focused on it, when we got the resources for it, when we all pulled together and dealt with it. We will solve this problem just as we solved an out-of-control, crime-infested city in the late 1990s.
City Hall has no shortage of plans lining city shelves over the years. The bigger challenge in recent history at City Hall has been implementing those plans. One of the big issues in the last year or two has been the general plan. The city council voted, approved that. The mayor signed that. It's now law. Both of your opponents in this race say that they have serious problems with the general plan. They would have voted against it had they been on the city council at that time. What do you think about this new smart growth approach? Is this wise for Fresno? Does it put the city at a disadvantage when it comes to Clovis and Madera? Or is the city serving its best interests in trying to rein in that outward sprawl that has been going really since the 1950s?
Well, when I was on the council, I was a very strong advocate and spoke very critically of the way our planning has gone. I mean, we allowed sprawl. We allowed leapfrog development. All of those kinds of issues put a strain on critical services. You can't provide the police and fire when you've got a development that's 3 miles away from any other development. That's why I've been critical of other leapfrog developments that have taken place in the county. Having said that, I've always supported trying to create our growth where it's a little bit more compact, a little more dense. But we don't want to also just seal off our borders and not allow sequential development to take place. I've always been in favor of development as long as it was orderly, as long as it continued our expansion, allowed for the growth in our city. But we didn't have leapfrog development, and the planning wasn't just strip malls everywhere. So I've always been for smart growth, sequential development. And I've opposed any kind of planning that, you know, did not address residential concerns. And when I was on the council, I always insisted that developers meet with the residents who lived around their proposed developments. That often didn't happen before I came on the council. Pretty much these developments were just, you know, rushed through and ramrodded through, and any concerns from residents really weren't seriously addressed. When I came on the council, I said, that's not going to happen anymore. And I insisted that developers meet with the residents, and those issues were addressed. And developers, to their credit, did meet with the residents, and it was a much more collaborative effort in terms of when there were new developments taking place. So the long answer to your question is that I support the general plan, but I also think there needs to be some effort at making sure that we handle new growth and that we don't just allow Madera and Clovis to get all the new development. We want to have new development. We just want it to be orderly, sequential, and of sound planning.
Gary Bredefeld served on the Fresno City Council in the late 1990s, early 2000s, and now is seeking a return to his seat representing District 6. He's one of three candidates. You can hear interviews with the other candidates for that seat on our website at kvpr.org. Gary, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
This is Valley Edition. Chuck Chancey Park will be rocking in downtown Fresno on Saturday, packed with thousands of fans. But the Fresno Grizzlies won't be there. The Fresno Fuego won't be there. Instead, it's a music fest called Grizzly Fest. It's the second edition of the festival inside Chuck Chancey Park, this year featuring the indie band Cold War Kids, also Fresno's own hip-hop superstar Fashawn, and the reggae fusion band Slightly Stupid. Joining us now to talk about the event and more about what's going on at the park, we have two guests with us. Sam Hansen, he's the director of marketing for the Fresno Grizzlies, and also Aaron Hakinian, who's the promoter of this event. Gentlemen, welcome. I want to start with you, Sam. I think of the Grizzlies as a baseball team. Why get involved in the concert and music festival promotion business?
Well, for one, we wanted to utilize the stadium on non-game day dates. It's a beautiful stadium, and I think that more people in Fresno should familiarize themselves with the facility. And I have a long-standing relationship with Aaron. We've been involved in promoting events in the past before connection with the Grizzlies. So another angle that we wanted to take with marketing the Grizzlies as a brand was we wanted to step back and sort of connect the Grizzlies with downtown and make it more about absorbing the solutions for downtown as opposed to just trying to cater to baseball fans. I feel that in the past the Grizzlies marketed to what they thought was customers for their product, and I am now marketing products to our customers.
That's a great way of thinking about it. I want to talk some more about that in a little bit. I want to turn right now, though, to Aaron. This is something that you've been involved in the local music world for a long time now, but putting on a music festival, that's like a whole another level.
It takes a lot of patience, first of all. It takes having a lot of good people. You're working with a good team. I'm fortunate enough to have worked with Sam here for probably over 15 years now. And first of all, I want to say, Joe, good to see you again.
Yes.
It started all at KFSR many, many, many moons ago when we were in college and learning the ropes of what music was and entertainment was back then. But, you know, having a good team is really important. And I felt doing shows and concerts and event, you know, planning and so forth for so many years, I wanted to elevate and kind of challenge myself. And, you know, I looked at the market and I kind of forecasted, you know, is this something that we can be able to produce here on a yearly basis? Are there enough consumers? Is there enough, you know, revenue that can put on something on a national level? So last year when I approached this idea to Sam, he really, you know, we kind of see eye to eye on a lot of marketing and branding and how, you know, how to go about certain products or ideas. And we decided, you know, to do it the first year, and the Fresno Grizzlies came on board and really partnered with myself and my partner Aaron Gomes, and we made it free. And we just wanted to see how many people would come out to the park, you know, what type of demographic would come out to the park. And, you know, we produced a pretty well lineup, if you'd ask me, even for the budget we had. Fashion headlined it. We had about over 7,000 people there last year. And we just said, if we're going to do it again this year, let's take it up another notch. And, you know, now we have a ticket price of $35, but we brought in A-level entertainment from that are nationally known artists. For example, Cold War Kids just headlined Coachella, had over 40,000 people. Technically, they have 100,000 in attendance, you know, for the three-day weekend at Coachella. Slightly Stupid, they headline festivals, they get 30,000 people. So we looked at it as, if we're going to do this, let's try to bring the cream of the crop in that festival world. And let's see if this can be attainable here. And we just want to build the brand. We want to continue to do this. And, you know, the Fresno Grizzlies again came this year and said, you know, we're with you guys. And let's see if we can make this happen and help this community out. And really, the stadium was a big part of it. You know, the lack of stuff being done there, we decided to utilize it and make something unique and different.
So you've also got something interesting going on. You have multiple different genres here. You've got Fashion, hip-hop, great local artist who has an international reputation. You also have Cold War Kids, an indie band, different genres. Does that work, and is that part of, like, what's almost necessary to make something this big work in Fresno?
Yeah, well, I mean, every time I come up with ideas, I always call Sam, and I'm, what do you think about these groups? Or, you know, my partner Aaron, we kind of discuss it internally of what, you know, what artists kind of can relate to one another. You know, Cold War Kids is a really big indie rock band. They actually have pop stardom now. They had a song called First, which was the number one played single in rock in 2015. They made number one on the Billboard charts. So they have tremendous success riding with them, but they come from the indie side of the industry. Fashion being the same. You know, he started as an independent artist and then signed with Nas and Mass Appeal, and he kind of got this global fame behind him. Slightly Stupid, they've been around for 20 years. They're a staple in the reggae world. So we looked at it as, if you love reggae, you're going to love, you know, Cold War Kids, because they represent the same type of grassroots artistic integrity. If you like them, you're going to like Fashion. And then we added a gentleman by the name of Atmosphere, who's never played here, who has probably one of the biggest independent followings in the United States. So all four of our headliners kind of overlap one another to a degree where if you like one, you're probably going to like all four of them. And then we went and picked the local artists that we felt are working their hardest or are working with the smartest, you know, in the smartest ways, because it's not easy to be an artist. So we felt like we chose artists that represent this lineup to the best of what we'd be happy with as promoters, to say this is the show we put on. You know, and Sam can speak on it a little bit more, but it was really a strategic planned lineup that we put together.
Yeah, we definitely spent a lot of time, I guess, mulling over the product mix, if you will. I come from a retail background, and we understand the importance of having the right product mix and having, you know, balance. So we planned out a well-respected reggae act, a well-respected hip-hop act, and a indie rock act also, with and all of them having a long range.
Sam, I want to talk to you more about some of the really creative marketing the Grizzlies have done. You've been sort of the brainchild behind a lot of these. You know, it's more than just a design. It's more than just a T-shirt. It's a holistic approach, it seems, that the team has embraced over the past few years in really connecting with Fresno. A, is that intentional? And B, did you ever think the taco thing would grow as big as it has? You're wearing one of these Fresno taco shirts.
Yeah, it's Tuesday
right now, and I see these hats all over town and even beyond Fresno. These things are really popular. First, was that an intentional strategy that you guys have to try to market holistically part of Fresno?
Yes, I became director of marketing last season, whenever we lost our affiliation with the San Francisco Giants. And I thought it was a perfect time. I had began work with the Grizzlies as a graphic designer, worked my way up to marketing manager when I created Taco with Mike Azagueda. We created Taco Truck Throwdown. And then I was directing merchandise. And so I always had a pro-Fresno agenda. When I first started working with the Grizzlies, they were the AAA affiliate of the World Series champion San Francisco Giants. And I always thought that that was a nice benefit to have on our side, but I didn't feel like we should have been branding ourselves as such. So when we lost the affiliation with the Giants, I said, okay, well, now is the perfect opportunity for us to really embrace ourselves as a Fresno brand, which is something that I wanted to do all along. And as cliche as this sounds, by losing the Giants, we found ourselves. And then it was just full force Growlifornia. And our affiliation with Houston, I found the common denominator between us and Texas, which is sort of that sort of sense of autonomy and sort of that us being our own region and being very pro Central California. And so all of our designs and promotions tend to sort of reflect that, if you've probably noticed. And tacos and taco trucks, you know, indigenous to Central California, one might be able to prove that taco trucks were actually invented here in Central California as the early lonchero trucks that fed the migrant workers. So attaching ourselves to that, playing up the heritage of Central California and tacos, and then just evolving it into the Fresno Tacos brand and us playing as the Fresno Tacos every Tuesday was something that is honestly truly organic. I'm excited that it has went global and national. We sell a ton of product in cities all over the United States and the world, but that wasn't the aim. The aim was actually just to celebrate something that is truly unapologetically Central Californian.
Has merchandise become a more important part of the Grizzlies overall
picture
huge. Now, sales-wise?
Sales-wise, definitely, definitely. We had our highest year in merchandise ever last year, and the year before that was the highest year before that. So, and we're on track to, we might double what we did last year this year. So,
and the tacos are a big part of that.
The tacos are a huge part of that. But also, I've seen a lot of people in Fresno just really gravitating towards the Grizzlies as a brand. You know, all of us, I think, are Bulldog bred, and you know, we love Fresno State, and we're. Collaborating with Fresno State, we have a claws and paws design and whatnot. But I think that Fresno is big enough to where it can actually support two brands as that icon of Fresno pride. And that's what the Grizzlies seem to have become as of late.
Grizzly Fest is coming up Saturday. If people want tickets,
go to www.grizzlyfestival.com or the Chukchansey Park box office.
That voice you hear is Aaron Hakinian. He is a promoter of Grizzly Fest that's coming up this Saturday. It's featuring the indie band Cold War Kids, local hip-hop superstar Fashawn, and also the reggae band Slightly Stupid, as well as other local artists and more on multiple stages at Chukchansey Park. Also joining us today, Sam Hansen, director of marketing for the Fresno Grizzlies. Guys, thanks so much for stopping by.
Hey, Joe, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
That's all for today's Valley Edition. As always, we'd like to know what you think. You can email us talk@kvpr.org and tweet us. We're at KVPR and at Valley Edition. Find our podcasts, audio archives, and more at kvpr.org. For Valley Edition producer and reporter Ezra David Romero, reporters Carrie Klein and Jeffrey Hess, audio engineer Marv Allen, and production and operations manager Don Weaver, I'm Joe Moore. This is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, the California Endowment. Health happens when California values schools more than prisons. Learn more at calendow.org. And by the California Healthcare Foundation, dedicated to a healthcare system that works for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org.